Hebrews chapter 13, 1 to 3. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison, as though you were in prison with them, those who are being tortured, as though you yourselves were being tortured. Christine, blessings to you.
Thank you, Randy. I am excited to be here with you today. It's gorgeous outside, but we'll be in here for a little bit longer, and then we can all go and frolic. I've been with Church World Service as the Congregational Resource Developer since this past September. So I'm hitting my seven-month mark soon. At this time last year, I was completing my studies at Eastern Mennonite University. And I can say that I recognize a few of the faces in the crowd here. I would like to invite you to find me after the worship time if you have any questions with my presentation today. I really enjoy discussing and engaging with others around the topic of migration, and I have many stories, personal stories, to share with you just from the past 7 months. Okay, there we go. Today I will be sharing about human migration, or the movement of people from one place with the intention of settling temporarily or permanently in a new location. This is a phenomenon that is found throughout the books of the Bible and throughout our human history. In the Bible, there are stories of foreigners being rejected and foreigners being welcomed, people wandering through wilderness, and people finding safety. I am currently in the process of studying these stories in exploration of what some may call a theology of migration. Today, I'm not going to be sharing about this academic and theological exploration. Instead, I'm going to share some current realities in our world, some facts, some statistics, and some stories in our local community. Pictures will be included. But if you're really interested in really in-depth exploring the academic pursuits of theology of migration, I have some texts that I could share with you and articles that I printed out just in the office the other day. Refugees are part of the population of the displaced. You may have heard of the term migration, and then you may have heard of the term forced migration. We could speak for hours at length about the history of migration, about my ancestors, and about your ancestors. Truly, the local Mennonite church was born out of a population of forced migrants. You can see that this conversation is bigger than just now. And you can see that is bigger than just here, too. We could talk about Lancaster County, but we can talk about the rest of the world in this conversation. And in fact, we do need to talk about our global communities while remembering our roots as migrants. It is estimated between 60 and 90,000 unaccompanied children crossed the border between U.S. and Mexico this past year. The youngest child that one of my coworkers interviewed was 7. Millions of Syrians are leaving their home in order to reach bloated refugee camps. My Ethiopian friends, who have been here in Lancaster for just over a year and whose story I'm going to share with you in a little bit, are here safe. However, they know that their cousins are currently, right now, walking many miles to reach the Kakuma camp in Kenya. Migration and forced migration is surely something we need to remain educated about. This is the definition of a refugee, and it was formally adopted in 1951 and has served as the defining guide for 29 nations who welcome refugees and displaced individuals as permanent citizens. Since the inception of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, forced migrants have had an intergovernmental organization assisting them in their search for safety. You can see that the organized response to forced migration is relatively new, have been adopted in the 50s, early 50s. My ancestors, who were fleeing religious persecution in Switzerland and Germany, would not have been assisted by an intergovernmental organization in their ocean crossing. They would have, however, been assisted by dedicated churches and individuals who welcomed them. Let's look at this definition a little bit. Refugees are people who flee their country because of a well-founded fear of persecution based on their race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group, and who are unable or unwilling to return home. So just picking that apart a little bit, it states a well-founded fear. So what that means is that the United Nations isn't going to wait for an individual to have been persecuted. If you are from a certain population and it's been proved that there's some persecution going on, you will be able to receive your refugee status. I like to clarify that because I believe that that's a really good point of that definition. Now let's talk about the journey that many individuals are taking after fleeing their homeland. Refugees have two choices when they arrive in that second country, the country that's outside and away from their home. They can return back to their home country when their home country is deemed safe. They can settle into the country that which they fled to. Or they can resettle permanently into a third country. That first option is considered the most durable option. However, it's not always a possibility. And actually, right now, the United Nations is saying that returns back to an individual's home country are at their lowest since 1951. Conflicts are becoming more protracted around the world, and solutions aren't able to be sought. That second option is considered the second most durable choice. You're still close to the culture that you grew up on. You're still close to your friends and relatives, and you're still close to the land, the climate, the, you know, language that you are familiar with. However, many countries are not capable or willing to give permanent status to the sometimes hundreds of thousands of refugees who arrive at their borders. It's very, very complicated, very difficult. And that third option, resettlement permanently into a third country, well, that's what CWS does right here in Lancaster. And that's the population of individuals that I am helping to assist and navigate and hear their stories from. So, what happens while individuals are waiting for that first, second, or third option to become available to them? This picture is of a Somali mother who is in the Kakuma refugee camp with her children. Right now, Somalia, you'll know that there's has been devastating civil war and conflict in the countries, and hundreds of thousands of Somali individuals are fleeing across the border into Kenya. The average stay in a refugee camp worldwide right now is 17 years. Of course, there are going to be some individuals who saw no time in a camp, who were able to get on an airplane and go to a third country without any time in a refugee camp. However, looking at the high end of this, I am friends with some families who spent 20 or 25 years in a camp. Couples got married in camps. They had children and started their families in refugee camps. Camps are really cities now. They're established communities. And that third fact right there that I sometimes find the most discouraging in this conversation is that resettlement into a third country, a third safe country, is an option for fewer than 1% of the world's refugees. So that is one of the reasons why the stay in refugee camps is so long. If return rates back to their home country are at their lowest since the 50s, and many countries aren't willing to give permanent resettlement to the refugees who have fled into their land, and resettlement's only an option for fewer than 1%, we have a conversation to have. There are millions of individuals who are displaced, who do not have a home, who are strangers in their land because they can't say, "This is where I belong." Right now, half of the world's refugees are under the age of 18. This picture is of Rima, a 4-year-old Syrian girl who's very happy to receive toys at a UNHCR toy distribution. She is one of over 3 million Syrian refugees at this point who have fled into neighboring countries. Many more are still within Syria and are considered internally displaced persons. What does this mean for us here in Lancaster? It means that many of the families who are coming actually have young children right now. And we need to work closely with the schools to jumpstart the children's education that sometimes may have been delayed. I've been speaking in elementary, middle, and high schools more frequently. And actually, Locust Grove, just over here, has seen several former refugee children in the past 10 years. So know that, you know, this fact really does mean something to our community. Okay. So before we get to really the stories of it, we should talk about some numbers, which are a little overwhelming. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, it's over 16 million refugees and people in refugee-like situations. So it's individuals considering that first definition, they fit into that definition, they've been given refugee status on a piece of paper, or the United Nations says, we haven't gotten to all of those individuals yet, so we estimate that there's more. That 16 million are just the individuals who are considered refugees. When we're talking about the nation of the displaced, we're talking about close to 52 million individuals. That's refugees, asylum seekers, victims of human trafficking, the unaccompanied children, and migrants who are leaving their home in order to seek a better life. So that's 16 million. You'll see that from that 16 million, the United Nations estimates that there are just over 800,000 who are in need of urgent resettlement. They really can't return back to their home. Perhaps camps, refugee camps, aren't a good long-term It's not a good long-term solution for anybody, but perhaps it's really the case for a specific family. Maybe it's a single-parent head of house with multiple children, and there is a grandparent in the United States or in Canada or, you know, Brazil, Sweden, who can assist the family better than what the resources in the camp can. So the United Nations has estimated that number is an urgent resettlement, need for resettlement. But right now, there's only 28 countries who welcome refugees. That means there are fewer than 100,000 spots each year for resettlement. And what does that mean for the people who come here? They know that they are within that 1%. The families do know that, and they are very, very, very thankful. They work very hard, and many times they have left friends and family members in the camp for this opportunity. So, you know, there's that split, that divide there. My Ethiopian friends make international phone calls to Kenya to speak with their relatives, and they knew when their cousins were starting that walk to the refugee camp that family, that Ethiopian family, had just spent 11 years at. So there's, you know, that reality there. And I should make note that the number, the 1% of refugees who come to the United States, that's not low because individuals are failing their background or health screenings. It's low because of political will around the world. Okay. In our world today, how many of you keep up with the news, listen to NPR, read the paper in the morning? It can wear you down. When I started with CWS in the summer, whenever I was out on the road driving, I would flip on NPR and listen to the news. Well, that was right around the time where The news was filled with reports from Ukraine, and they were interviewing families who, you know, on the radio, they weren't going out right and saying, these are refugee individuals. They were saying they are away from their homes. They've left their town. And in my head, I kept thinking, oh, man, I know the statistics. I know some of what these families may be facing in the future. They have entered into the nation of the displaced. And it can you know, currently listening to the news, be very devastating and upsetting. But there are a lot of good things happening, too. Just like to highlight some of what's taking place in our world. You'll see that picture of Iraqis fleeing militants in early 2014. There are many more documentations now of Syrian individuals and Iraqi families leaving the area because of militants, because of ISIS. There's still concern in the protracted aftermath of conflicts such as the Rwandan genocide. We're still seeing Congolese families who have Rwandan background needing to flee their land in the Congo because rebel groups associate them with Rwanda as ancestors. If your ancestors are from a certain background, you many times aren't safe and have to run. I've been working with a woman, a Congolese woman, who has been separated from her family for 6 years. She fled conflict in the Congo, got to Nigeria, and settled in a refugee camp. She accessed the United States resettlement program. She didn't know where her husband and three children were. She was able to get resettled in Lancaster. But here's the thing. There are several really, really filled with God moments in her story. She had a layover in Germany. When she was in Germany, she was the last woman to board her airplane, and one of the pastors, one of the men who was assisting the refugees who were on that flight, said, I know a Congolese pastor in Lancaster. Let me give you his name and phone number. When she got off the out of the taxi at the Lancaster airport, the man who was translating for her was this pastor that the other individual in Germany had told her of. And then 2 months later, she was able to locate her husband and three children on a list of participants in a church meeting in a small town in Kenya. And because individuals over there knew her story and were looking for certain names. And she's been, we helped her sign the papers in our office, and now her 18-year-old daughter is going to be reunited with her in the coming weeks with the rest of her family to follow. That's just, I'd like to share that story. It's wonderful. Also, just last night, I read an article that news is breaking from Kenya that the government of Kenya would like to close the world's largest refugee camp, over 500,000 individuals, close to 1 million. They'd like to close the largest refugee camp in the world, Dadaab, because of the most recent conflicts and the shooting in the school. Fear is taking hold in the government of Kenya, and they believe that militants are able to hide out in refugee camps. But we do need to continue talking about the over 500,000 families that have been living in that camp for 20 and 25 years without a place to go. Okay, local realities. In our office, we assist over 300 new individuals each year, and you can see the breakdown of nationality from this past fiscal year up here. So where are people coming from now? I find it very interesting that decades ago, EMM, Eastern Mennonite Missions, and Mennonite Central Committee actually had many missionaries in the Somalia region. So there's a connection to our local community as more of these families are locating to Lancaster now. We also assist the local immigrant and asylum seeker communities of the area. One thing that I did not know before starting with Church World Service is that asylum seekers will many times be leaving the York Detention Center. In our country, as well as many other countries, the system in place is that while if you didn't get refugee status overseas, if you're waiting to get your claim to asylum substantiated, you will be held in a detention facility. Many times, that detention facility is already a prison. It's used as to hold individuals who have broken the law, while immigrants and asylum seekers have broken no law. One local story that I will share here is I got a phone call from a mother 2 weeks ago who her son had been picked up and taken to the York Detention Center. He does not have official papers to be a permanent resident, but she does, as well as the her son's father. I believe that the lapse in that paperwork was probably due to how complicated it is. Her son is around my age, and he's at threat now to be deported to Colombia. He came to Lancaster when he was 3, and he doesn't speak Spanish. So the mother was telling me, if he gets off the airplane in Colombia, he doesn't have any family down there, he has no connections, and he doesn't speak the language. I was able to refer her to several services that are able to assist her son, and I'm pretty hopeful. I've been remembering that son in thought and prayer, pretty hopeful that this case is not one that we need to deport in our country. Okay, I'm going to share with you about the Abays. Change their name. I have found good friends in this family and am continually amazed by their perseverance. They came to the United States just over a year ago and are coming to us from a very rare ethnic minority in Ethiopia. They speak a language that nobody else speaks in Pennsylvania. For the longest time, we were thinking the other person who spoke the language was in Minnesota. But now we know that they have one uncle in Virginia and another Anwak-speaking individual in Baltimore. So they had a party several weeks ago that I went to that had, it was just lovely to see their language being spoken by many individuals. And I was the person who wasn't understanding what was happening. I was very happy for them. They have had to face many challenges because usually when families come, there's at least several others who speak their language and have the same cultural traditions. Mamo and Desta, names changed, are great parents and had 5 children when they came. They greeted their newest child, their 6th baby, January 3rd. She was a little bit early and I wasn't quite expecting that. But I learned how to put an infant car seat into a car because they do not do it for you anymore at Women's and Babies. I do not have children yet, so I'm learning. I made a snowman with the children, and we made snow houses in which I realized, once again, cultural differences. My snow house had a peaked roof and windows and a door. Their snow houses were domed. I'm having a wonderful time relating with the family and becoming friends. We read together. We watch Planet Earth together. We hear stories, and they give me news articles about their home village in Ethiopia. I'd like to leave you with a challenge today to continue your education in regards to migration and the strangers in your community. Read, listen, watch, ask questions, and grow together as you learn. If you'd like to read some memoirs or children's books or, I don't know, any nonfiction books about this topic, I have resources galore. I'm working with congregations in order to explore education, but also in order to explore how we can connect with one another. My position is new, so please know that there are many, many different ways in order to connect with families. I'm, constructing new methods, thinking up new ways in order to make it easier and more familiar for congregations, small groups, Sunday school classes, in order to hear stories from other families and be that intentional welcoming face in their community. Maybe it would be just showing up to the house with a mother who is spending time at home with her new infant and spends the day alone with her infant, 2-year-old and 5-year-old who aren't in school, and it's relaxing to have another face come into the picture. Maybe it's walking to the closest culturally relevant grocery store with a family. That's usually a piece of knowledge that comes after many weeks or months in Lancaster. We all go to Walmart or Giant in our first several weeks. I'd like to leave you with a prayer. Please pray with me. God, no one is stranger to you, and no one is ever far from your loving care. In your kindness, watch over migrants, refugees, and asylum seekers, those separated from loved ones, those who are lost, and those who have been exiled from their homes. Bring them safely to the place where they long to be, and help us always to show your kindness to strangers and those in need. We ask this through Christ our Lord, who too was a refugee and immigrant, who traveled to another land searching for a home. Amen.